Thanks a million, Kate.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. And yeah, listening to Kate there, that is exactly what it is. 24 degrees in Dublin, 24 in Galway. We had a quick look in Ovens, County Cork, which always sounds warm, 23 degrees there. While Birr in County Offaly, also very warm, 24 degrees. So again, downpours last night, as predicted by Alan O'Reilly from Carlo Weather on yesterday's show. So if you needed the rain, we hope you got it. 51551 for your text today, ray@rte.ie for your emails. We always love to hear from you. Speaking of which, we got this text into the show yesterday. Hi, Catherine. A quick one for you. I have tickets for Ben Howard in Fairview Park this Thursday, but all my friends are busy and I have no one to go with. Should I go alone? I'm a bit shy. Now, we don't know if this was from a man or a woman, but first of all, I would say this is not the week to forgo an outdoor gig in Ireland by an amazing artist. It is perfect concert weather. So let's just think about this. So if you are, first of all, if you're really uncomfortable with the idea going on your own, I would say throw it out to your WhatsApp groups, like your family, your colleagues in work, maybe somebody that you haven't even been in touch with for a while, but you know loves their tunes. I think especially this time of year, that would be a nice surprise for a lot of people to get, you know, a WhatsApp message, surprise gig, free, perfect invitation. But failing that, like, I would just ask yourself, what's holding you back from going on your own? And I suppose for a lot of us, it would be that case of looking like Billy No Mates. But we had a little look. OK, the doors open at 7 p.m., which is good because it's not too early. So I would say get in, get something to eat, grab a drink, sit on the grass with your shades on. Always a good one. Looking like the cool, breezy person that you are. Well, you're not, but, you know, it helps. And I would just say everybody else is so much more concerned about what's happening on their own night than yours. And then sure, when the gig starts, you can mingle up through the crowd, at which point everyone's pretty much shoulder to shoulder with whoever, and the music is up and everybody is getting into the vibe of it. And that's the other thing. I think if you're at a gig like that, it is really important that you like the artist and you like the music, because that's the reason that 95% of the crowd are there. But if anyone has done a gig on their own and can share any other tips, let us know. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. The only time I think I went to a gig on my own, I went to see Bon Jovi in Frankfurt. I must have been 17 or 18 at the time, and I was au pairing over there, and I blagged a ticket outside the gig, which was half over because it was the only price that I could afford. They were getting rid of them at that point. And I loved it because the crowd was pumped at that point. So, and we've talked a lot on this show before about solo travel and about going for dinner on your own and going to the cinema on your own. And it can be a very liberating experience once you get a few of them under your belt. So again, let us know if you do. And some people just prefer going to gigs on their own so they can really get into the music. But it's funny being an adult sometimes, isn't it? Like, there are so many things that we know. However, sometimes a little fact comes at you left of centre that has coined the phrase, I was today years old when I learned. For example, this little piggy went to market does not mean he went grocery shopping. Or that a loofah you use in the shower, you know, the loofah you use to scrub the body, that's actually a fruit. I was not made aware of that until 2 weeks ago. Or that breakfast is only called that because it's the first time you're eating since the day before, hence you're breaking your fast. Well, a driver from Cork has gone a little bit viral with his discovery of a hidden trick that is blowing people's minds. And all of the Ray Darcy Show team has been in and out and up and down from the desk into the car park this afternoon, because, you know, the car keys clicker, the button that locks and unlocks the car. Not every car has one, but I'm sure most do at this point. Well, did you know that if you hold down the unlock or lock button, it also closes and opens the electric windows? News for us here today. And if you're listening going, ah, oh, jeez, Catherine, we all know that. I'm telling you, not one person in our team did. A game changer. So if you've left the window open a little bit, you don't have to run all the way back to the car to close it. You can do it from afar. So give it a try. See if it works, and let us know. Also, any other late adult learning examples, get them into us. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Thinking of things that are, or speaking of things that are surprising, I thought to myself, there is no way this tune is 10 years old. But it is, I tell you. That is Daft Punk and Pharrell Williams there. Get Lucky, 10 years old today. And people will remember our very own Linda Martin. She did a fine version of it on the Saturday Night Show too. But that is a good summer tune. Niamh has texted in, try Giganometry, which is a group on Meetup. So this is in relation to going to gigs on your own. They arrange events for gigs. It's a free resource to meet people according to hobbies, interests, and in this case, to attend events you don't want to go to alone. She says, I would go to an indoor evening gig solo, but not an outdoor gig. Good luck to that person anyway. Yeah, that's interesting. I suppose with an indoor gig, yeah, darker, and there's always something to lean against, you know, whether it's a pillar or a bar or a wall, which instantly is makes you feel more relaxed, I suppose. Somebody else, when we were talking about the car window trick, just tried it with the car windows and it works. Catherine Martina here. I have a terrifying fear of a thunderstorm and I'm just driving out of Birr to Kennedy and the lightning frightened the living daylights out of me. Geez, slow down, Martina, and take it handy on the roads. Yeah, I mean, some people are just terrified of thunder and lightning. My advice about going to a gig on your own, be sure to fully plan how you get home, then enjoy. And that comes in from Anne. Yeah, and I suppose that's the same for everybody. Let people know that you're going on your own. You know, you just need one person to contact and one person to know where you are. But it's very important. All right, time now for me to tell you about this. Yes, it is our whodunit quiz and we are looking for two of you to answer three whodunit questions each on music, sport, TV, books, politics, films. We're going to get you on air after 4 o'clock and like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get 2 points. However, if you opt for a clue, which is slightly easier and you get it right, that will get you 1 point. So we have a fantastic prize. This week we have teamed up with Mayo North Tourism to give away some lovely breaks located on a stunning rugged part of the Wild Atlantic Way with breathtaking natural coastal landscapes and miles of pristine beaches to explore. North Mayo is a year-round destination. So what have we got on offer today? Well, it's 2 nights with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening at the stunning Mount Falcon Estate, one of Ireland's most beautiful country estates. In summer, Mount Falcon Estate comes alive with the sound of music with their live music dinner shows every Friday and Saturday night. And this year, they're introducing woodland sound baths and forest bathing on the hotel's 100-acre grounds. Wow, that sounds beautiful. And it is also renowned for its salmon fishery, falconry and spa. But above all, it is known for its true West of Ireland hospitality. So to check it all out, you can visit the website mayonorth.ie and all you've got to do to be in with a chance of winning that fantastic prize is answer this question. Which band play Dublin next week? Is it the Pet Shop Boys or the Pet Shop Girls? Give us a call, 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. If you're not in, you can't win. Back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a Cork poet is still pinching herself after featuring in this year's Leaving Cert English exam. Her name is Victoria Kennefic. Her poem Guest Room was the unseen poem in English Paper 2 and Victoria is on the line. What can I say, Victoria? A huge congratulations to you. You're part of Irish history now.
It would seem so, Catherine. Thank you so much for having me on the line. And happy Yeats Day as well. It's very appropriate that we're speaking poetry today. It's the 158th anniversary of Yeats's birth.
Wow.
So as poet in residence in the Yeats Society, I just had to sneak that in there and give our Yeats a big up. Yeah, it's been an incredible couple of days. It was quite a huge surprise and something I never really expected.
So how did you find out that the poem had showed up on the paper?
Well, like everyone else, I didn't know what was coming up in the paper. And I have a few friends and colleagues who are invigilating. So once they had taken up the exams, I got this flurry of texts and messages going, oh, my God, you're on. So it was very thrilling and surreal, actually, because obviously as a student, I had studied the unseen poem, as we all have.
Yes.
And equally as a teacher, I had guided a lot of students through that particular task. So it felt like an incredible part of my journey as a writer to be featured.
Yeah. And I mean, I just loved hearing the stories of your former students messaging you and like asking you on Twitter, have I interpreted correctly? Like probably going, hey, hope you're well, you know, hope you're keeping good. But like, did I actually do this justice?
Exactly. Well, I was really surprised and interested by the fact that they were able to contact me, because obviously when I was doing my exams, I never had any access to the poets I was studying. I couldn't go and shake Emily Dickinson awake from her grave or anything. So when I went to my Instagram, it had, as they say, these times blown up, and it was full of messages, not only from my own former students, but from students all over the country. And it was really heartening. They were so friendly and so warm and so enthusiastic. And some of them were obviously wanting the answer, so to speak. But some of them were just speaking about how they had discussed the poem with their friends afterwards, and they wanted to know whose interpretation was the most accurate. And my favorite one was a student who just emailed me saying, "Boss poem," which is like the greatest compliment I think you could ever receive from an 18-year-old.
You know you've made it
yes,
with the kings
absolutely.
Of culture, you know, when they're all getting in touch with you like that. So tell us about the poem. It's called Guest Room.
Mm-hmm. So it's part of my first poetry collection that came out in 2021 called Eat or We Both Starve, and it came out with Kirkenet Press. And it's a poem, I suppose, that grapples with or explores the changing relationship between mother and daughter, and particularly, I suppose, as the daughter gets older and by extension, the mother too. And I suppose that feeling when you have your own home as an adult and your mother comes to visit you, and that strange switch in roles, and wondering, you know, having seen your mother get ready for guests and so on, wondering if you level up, if you're up to scratch in terms of your domestic prowess. But there are so many different interpretations, and I think a lot of the students were worried about, you know, the status of the mother, whether she was alive or dead, and the relationship between the mother and the daughter. And really, what's so wonderful about poetry is that there isn't any real answer, and the examiners don't know the answer either, because there isn't one. It's really up to your own interpretation. So that's what's so wonderful about poetry, is that you're always right, no matter what you kind of infer from it, as long as you have support. So it seemed to have captured their imagination in that way, in terms of that parental relationship, which I suppose they're beginning to experience now that they're moving out from home too, and their relationship with their parents is changing.
Mm. Well, it's called Guest Room, as I said. We'd love you to read it for us, if you would.
I'd be absolutely honoured, and I'm going to dedicate this to all of the Leaving Cert class of 2023 and their teachers.
Fab.
Guest Room. I changed the duvet cover like she showed me, inside out, corner to corner. I lifted over my head. Seams must be flush. I fold a pyramid of towels jeweled with tiny soaps, body lotions borrowed from hotels, the red hot water bottle I'll fill later, her rubber husband. I shake in back the carpet forest fresh, suck spider's web from each corner, grey and fuzzy, thick as pelts. My mother's perfume sniffs out that I did not iron the sheets. Her nightdress pressed into a perfect square, a village of potions on the bedside locker. My heart sags, an empty hammock yawning for the cradle of her arms, the animal comfort of her wolf fur coat. I hear her pottering in my kitchen, tidying. I turn out the light. Night cracks its knuckles.
Wow, beautiful.
Thank you.
And I know, I mean, there's so much in that poem. There's so much emotion in it. And of course, the piece that I went straight to is Shaken Back, the Carpet Forest Fresh. And I was just wondering how many of the students knew or would know what Shaken Back is. You know, I just remember the ad, and I think you can actually still buy it now, can you? Shaken Back.
I actually went looking because I was curious. You actually can. And Actually, none of the students got in contact with me about that, but the mothers did because they had asked their children. So the moms are all contacting me on Twitter and the students on Instagram. And the moms were like very mortified that their offspring didn't know Shaken Vac. But I figured that's okay. They have other talents, I'm sure.
Well, we actually found the ad. Do you remember this?
Do the shake and back and put the freshness back. Do the shake and back and put the freshness back. When you cop it, you're fresh.
You're that's a great poem too, honestly.
There you go. The line that my particular favourite line in that, it's so strong. My mother's perfume sniffs out that I did not iron the bed sheets. I just think that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So Camille, you were an English teacher, as you said, you're a poet. So what does it mean to you personally, Victoria, to feature in the Leaving Cert?
It's just an enormous honour and a real privilege. And I think, as I said earlier, having been through the journey of student and teacher and now poet, I hope it's kind of showing the students that anything is possible and that if you keep on, like I've been writing since I could hold a pen. So if you keep on doing something that you love and you keep on dedicating time to it, it will come to fruition eventually. And also, I just feel very privileged to share just this tiny moment with the students on their journey, that I'll always be that spectre in the background of their Leaving Cert.
Totally.
Even just for a second. And it's really lovely. It is really lovely that people are talking about poetry and seeing that poetry is such a relevant part of our lives. And I think we can forget that once we leave school. Mm. But that sense that it's always there, it's not just for weddings or funerals or births, but it's really part of the fabric of who we are, one of the oldest art forms. So I hope that the students of 2023 will remember that.
They surely will. And there was, what, like 50,000 students who saw the poem? That's a big audience.
It was like a Harry Styles-sized audience for a poem. So it was quite extraordinary. It's kind of amazing to think of them all simultaneously reading it. Obviously, they didn't have a choice, but just an amazing moment as a writer to know that. Mm. But equally, just that the state exams get an awful hard time, and you know, rightly for lots of reasons. But equally, it kind of now is giving air and oxygen to a lot of contemporary writers that might not have gotten that type of audience before. So I'm grateful for that as a bit of it anyway.
And I have to ask you, Victoria, because on the paper it was question one or question two, and question one was an A and B. What impression do you form of the daughter in this poem? And the B part of that was, did the poet's use of language in the above poem add to its impact on you, develop 2 points with reference to the poem in your response? And then question two was, guest room is a fascinating exploration of the complex relationship between mother and daughter. Do you agree or disagree with the statement? Develop your response with reference to both. Which question would you have answered?
Definitely B.
Okay.
The more room for waffle for me, the better.
Yeah, we love a good waffle, don't we?
Nothing like it, Catherine.
It was lovely to chat to you today. So where can people buy the collection?
So the collection, rather wonderfully, is available from all good bookshops. I recommend Kenny's in Galway, a wonderful independent bookshop that will ship it to you today or tomorrow, and you will have it without any shipping costs to enjoy.
Love it.
So eat or we both starve.
Lots of people texting in where we could get that collection. Another texter, the night cracks its knuckles. Perhaps you would ask Victoria what she was trying to convey in that line. Myself and my hubby were discussing it after the exam. Loved the poem. So that comes in from a mom. Yeah.
This is like the biggest thrill as a poet I've ever had in my life.
But it really must be.
It's just wild. Yeah.
You're like a talking point in houses all over the country.
It's poetry. It's just the power. And I think really if people are talking about it, and it's just one little poem, and there's so many amazing contemporary Irish poets at the moment, Jessica Traynor, Sean Hewitt, Rosamund Taylor, Elaine Feeney. There's so many brilliant poets that they're all alive and kicking, and they have brilliant books coming out and winning prizes. So it's wonderful to if you're interested, to keep going. Night Cracks Its Knuckles, I think, is it's one of those phrases that I think, obviously, it's open to your own interpretation, but there is, I suppose, that sense of morality and that kind of bittersweet sense when you're with your family of things being only temporary.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes your meeting with a family member might be your last meeting or one of your last meetings. So this kind of sense of us all moving up the chronological order of events, which is always sobering.
Beautiful. All right, Victoria Kennefic, it was so lovely to chat to you today, and
you too.
Love the poem, and as you as I said, lots of love for it around the country. So thanks for joining us, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So we were talking about solo gigging, solo travel, all sorts. Joe has said, I'm now 66. I go to concerts alone and with my friends. I went to Gavin James at the Galway Arts Festival, Tom Jones in the Marquee in Cork. You meet far more people going to gigs on your own. I'm going to a gig on Wednesday and Friday night as part of the Galway Festival. Nobody cares if you're on your own. Just go and enjoy the music. Liz said, I went to Spain on my own for some R&R. Brought my paint roller to put the sun cream on my back on the beach. Liz, you're a genius. It worked a treat, but caused a stir behind me. A man came over to offer me the job to paint his house. He said I was magic. I love that, Liz. That's thinking. That's thinking on your feet. Well, my next guest actually has probably done a fair bit of solo travel, or certainly time on his own, because with the fine weather over the last couple of weeks, people have been flocking to beaches and waterways around the country. And my guest has been making good use of the vast amounts of sea, rivers and lakes Ireland has to offer. It's Wicklow-based adventure athlete Damien Wiles. Good to see you, my friend. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, thank you. And you?
I am good. I am good. This weekend, you are going to be swimming. You're taking off 4:30 in the morning, Friday morning. You are going to be swimming 1 kilometre in every county in what you're calling the 32 Challenge.
That's it, yeah. So summarised very well.
Tell me about it. First of all, where did you come up with the idea for this?
I kind of have a bit of a background in endurance efforts. And,
but you know what? Then tell me about, like, tell me first of all about yourself, because this isn't the first challenge that you've taken on.
No. So I suppose I spent a lot of my youth in around the water. So when I was younger, we have pictures on the wall at home of you in wetsuits at 2 or 3 years old, camping out west for 6 weeks at a time.
You're a Greystones man originally.
Greystones man originally, yeah. So would have gone through holidaying over west. So you're snorkeling, rock pool fishing, swimming. And then kind of moves on to bodyboarding, surfing, sailing courses and Greystones.
Wow. So what's when you say there are pictures of you with, like, you know, little toddler in wetsuits, what's your earliest memory of the water?
Probably something to do with Letter Gesh, wading through kind of tidal pools, chasing sand eels or picking up crabs. But you have kind of other bits, like I'd spend a lot of time surfing. So we still remember kind of your first proper wave, remember the kind of like the way the weather was, where the water was, the light. Fantastic memories, really cool stuff. And I kind of got to my teens then where rugby took over for a while. But I was always trying to get back to the water. And when that all kind of wrapped up, I got to go on my J1 to Hawaii for 3 months surfing.
To surf, amazing.
Yeah, got to work in a surf school, which is probably still the best job I ever had. And then would have been in Australia for a couple of months. And every time I'd go travelling somewhere, it's always around getting in the water.
Okay.
And then I suppose as I was kind of moving on through things, I did a few Ironmen with my brother and my dad, and it's just a good way to spend time with them. But I never liked cycling or running, so that never really made sense. And I just wanted to get back to the water. And when my first child, Dylan, came along, I had to try and find something that I could do that would meant that I could spend time in the water, didn't feel too bad being away from him, and he could look forward to it. So that's where the paddleboarding came into it, prone paddling.
Okay, because paddleboarding I'd heard of. I'd never heard of prone paddleboarding.
No.
So this is like lying on the board, sitting on the board, using your arms with no paddle.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's like a really big surfboard. And so you're lying on your chest, or you can do knee paddling where you're on two knees. And the original intention
has been... lot of physicality.
It does. You're kind of in stress positions for a lot of it. But because of the amount of surfing and swimming I do, it felt like a more natural transition than stand-up paddleboarding. And I like the contact with the water.
Okay, so you've done, like, with the in terms of the paddleboard challenging you've done, you've gone around Ackle, you've gone from Holyhead to
Greystones. Yeah.
Like, these are big challenges. You mentioned your son, Dylan.
Yeah.
He's 3 at the moment. You have an 18-month-old daughter, Iski.
Iski, yeah.
Gorgeous name. Yeah. Named after Iski Britain or named after the place?
Named after the place, but I suppose there was a bit more weight behind it, seeing as there was someone of her credentials with that name already. So.
And you're married to Sarah Jane?
Yes,
who must be a very patient woman.
Very patient and encouraging. No, she's fantastic, because without that kind of backing to do these things, you'd never get through them, or you wouldn't even get the time to do it. People kind of forget to sacrifice that. It's not just the event, it's all the training in the weeks and months beforehand where you're being given time to go off and pursue these activities. So yeah, couldn't do it without her. It's great.
And I'm very conscious that I just kind of glibbed over the fact that you paddleboarded from the UK to Ireland, but conscious to give us time to talk about the 32 challenge. So we know that water is you're happiest in the water. You've taken on these huge challenges, you've done endurance tests, but this is like, you've never done anything like this before. So how is it going to work? Talk us through day. So you're 4:30 Friday morning. You're starting in Balbriggan Beach, and you are literally on the go until Sunday evening. And you are swimming 1 kilometre in every county in the country.
Yes.
How the hell do you do it?
You know, it's actually like logistically, it's a bit of a head wrecker, but it's very manageable. So for a start, every county has a body of water, whether it's a river, a lake or a coastline. So when I kind of first came up with the idea, I was just looking for something to do after doing the Irish Sea crossing, and that type of stuff takes serious volume, a lot of hours on the water, and it kind of has its impact on family life. And I didn't want to give up that time, seeing as I had 2 kids, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't sacrificing family time for that. But with this, because of the stop-start nature of it, you can kind of tweak your training to make sure that you're getting through the volume, but you don't need to spend that kind of persistent hours and hours in the water. You can kind of break it up across the day. So then when it comes to the logistics, you're kind of picking out safe places that you can swim. You're identifying lakes, rivers where people are already swimming, and then you start looking at the routes in between them, and over time you just kind of start building up layer by layer.
And I suppose then, just even geographically, if you're lakes and rivers, you're not so much worried all the time about the coastal, the tides, all of that. I mean, there's a certain amount of sea swimming in this, obviously, but
yes. Yeah, so the likes of the Irish Sea crossing and the Achill Round were very problematic because of the tides.
Mm.
So with the circumnavigation, if you're going for more than 6 hours, you're going to be against the tide at some stage. And similarly enough, with the Irish Sea crossing, you're just constantly kind of zigzagging with the tide. Whereas with this, once you're on the coast, you're concerned, but you're only ever maybe doing 500 metres against the tide at any one time, because you're doing an out and back. So it has, I suppose, less complications in terms of understanding what the water is doing.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the added complication of you're having a lot of algal blooms in a lot of the freshwater places. I'm hoping the rain kind of helps steady that up
a little bit this week. Okay, so as I said, you're starting in Balbriggan to Bettystown and Meath, then to Claharhead and Louth, then you're up to County Down, then you're off to Lough Neagh, you're Fermanagh, Donegal, Mullaghmore in Leitrim, Ross's Point, Lochmask in Mayo. And that's just day one.
And there's one mistake that I made on that there as well. Mullaghmore is Sligo, so I had to do a little bit of rerouting. But yes, that day one's about 13 counties.
Okay.
And then the second day is a bit heavy, because we have about 3 or 4 double swims. So you're doing, if you're swimming on a border county, so Laois Kildare, the Barrow runs on that boat. So we'll do 2 kilometres in the Barrow to tick off both counties.
Okay. Who is joining you on this madness?
So we're lucky to have Dylan Troy. Dill is a fantastic videographer. He's actually going to document it. He has a driver with him. And so for the first day, I have a good friend of mine, Connor, who I'd spend a lot of time with driving west to go surfing. He's doing the first day and a half with me. And then my sister and my dad come on, and they do the second half of the second day and the third day.
Okay.
So
and when you're in the water, you're documenting it. Are you wearing any camera gear or any GoPro stuff, or are they just shooting from the land?
Land and drone. That's what they'll do. There is talks about trying to hook me up with some camera, but to be honest, when I'm getting into the thick of these things, you had a bit belligerent. I don't want anyone kind of disturbing me with cameras.
You need to concentrate and focus. Yeah. And are you sleeping as you drive then, or...?
Yeah, so sleep as you drive, but we are going to stop in Cong on the first night, probably finish up about 10 o'clock at night, sleep till maybe 4, half 4 in the morning and go again. I was tempted to try and push through just to do it constant, but I don't like the idea of swimming fatigue in waters you don't know. It just seems to be one step too far. So yeah, we said we'd reduce that risk.
So, I mean, you've talked briefly about the physical training that goes into something like this, but how do you mentally prepare yourself for something like this?
I suppose me looking at it, I think one of the big kind of misconceptions is that people get kind of caught up in doing races that other people do, and they see kind of the enjoyment that other people get. So I always think like the finish line of a race is the best selling point of it. People don't see the work that goes on beforehand. They see how happy someone is to finish. but where I am now, I kind of have a good understanding of what it takes to get to where I need to be to do something like this. And I suppose the thing I always have in my head is that your willingness to try and achieve or complete something has to outweigh the temptation to quit at any time. So whether that's training, getting up early, eating the right foods, not going for a night out, and then even in the middle of the swim, when you get there, you're kind of saying, look, you wanted to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Is where you wanted to put yourself. So when you kind of get rolling, you're able to kind of remind yourself of those bits and pieces. And there's other elements as well. I think I consider myself very lucky. I've two arms, I've two legs. I'm healthy. I'm ready to go. I think there's a lot of kids that are born that aren't given the opportunity to kick a ball or play chasing with their friends. You have people that lose the ability through accidents or illness. And I just think it's a shame that if you're fighting fit and you're good to go, why not test yourself? And it doesn't necessarily have to be through those kind of typical routes of marathons, 10Ks, 5Ks, swims.
It can be things that you kind of,
yeah, come up with things yourself.
You're raising funds for two very worthy causes. Why did you choose the RNLI and the Make-A-Wish Foundation?
RNLI, I suppose, very simply, I spend that much time in the water. Sure. Yeah, and you have any time, you know, if there's an incident on the water, that you have people who are willing to put their lives at risk to go and help them out. And I think for people to kind of volunteer to do that is pretty incredible. And as you'd mentioned, I have two kids. Again, very lucky that they're both happy and healthy. And I can't imagine being put in a position where they weren't. Mm-hmm. So to see an organization like that kind of giving people the opportunity for a bit of relief and a bit of alleviation from a situation like that, I think is just a very cool setup. So I think it's a nice way to raise a few quid and kind of remember how lucky you are, even when things do get a little bit dark or tough during the day.
And are they going to be, or is Sarah Jane and the kids, are they going to be with you at any point along the route? Or
No, not at the moment. I suppose with the way the weather is, it's fairly hot. I don't want the guys to be baking in the car waiting for me to arrive.
They're just going
to
be doing what they do, eating ice creams at the weekend.
Yeah, going, eating ice
where
creams,
is
playing,
Dad?
Playing with diggers.
Doing something mad again.
Yeah.
Damien Wiles, it is a pleasure to meet you. Good luck with the challenge. As I said, it starts 4:30 a.m. this Friday, Balbriggan. If people want to find out more, the Instagram page is Flow State Swimming.
Yep.
And the donate and the fundraising button is there for people
that's
to...
That's all through there as well, yeah.
Brilliant. All right, listen, as I said, good luck.
Thank
we'll be keeping
much.
A close eye and see how you go. Stay safe. That's the most important thing.
Absolutely.
Damien Wiles, nice to chat to you this afternoon. Back after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That is the wonderful Claire Sands there. And Kate on Twitter says, Claire Sands, the perfect tune for a perfect day. Yeah, couldn't agree more, Kate. Love her. And we were talking about challenges with Damien Wiles before that track. And I just want to remind you of a different challenge. This is the run with Ray and the whole team are taking the show on the road, broadcasting from beautiful Buncrana on Monday, June 26th. And they're on the road all week. The show will be broadcast as normal. And then at 5:30 every day, Ray will lead a 5K run, walk, jog, whatever you fancy. And as I said, Monday 26th of June, they are in beautiful Buncrana. And I actually just took a look at the location. It is stunning. So the 5K route, it's along a coastal path and there's the sand below you and what looks like a little swim spot too, with a ladder into the sea from what I can see on the photo. So if it's weather like this, you'd be glad for the bit of water close by. Spaces are limited for that one particularly. So I would advise you, if you are planning to be in the area June 26th, you can register now, runwithray.ie, and when you sign up you'll get a Run with Ray t-shirt too. And then on they travel to Sligo on Tuesday 27th, then to Mullingar Wednesday 28th, next it's Wicklow's Avondale Forest Park Thursday 29th, finishing up in Corker Park in Dublin on Friday 30th, where I'm going to see them home and join the gang and Ray at the start line there. So great event, runwithray.ie, and that is sponsored by Irish Life. Okay, we are crossing all the way over to Melbourne, Australia now, where Galway man Phil Conway has stayed up way past his bedtime to chat to us. He has just finished his stint on one of Australia's biggest reality shows, MasterChef. Phil, good night. How are you?
Good night. I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Good. Listen, it's great to talk to you. And we were following the antics on Instagram and Twitter because MasterChef is big here, Phil, but it is off the scale in Australia. So how was the whole experience for you?
Yeah, it was incredible. I had an amazing time on the show. I've wanted to be on it for such a long, long time. And like you say, it is the biggest reality show and the biggest cooking show that there is in Australia, if not the world. And I didn't quite realize how big it was back in Ireland till I actually announced that I was on it, and just, you know, so many people messaging me saying, we watch it every year, we can't wait to see you on it. So yeah, it was really great.
Yeah, like it's in its 15th season, it's shown all over the world. Mm. And so you made it out of 18 contestants, you were 12th to leave the show, which is really, really good.
Yeah, it is a massive effort. I think, you know, it was always hard leaving it, but, you know, you really take it for granted how many people actually apply and go through the whole audition process and get down to that final few and stick it in week in, week out, like I did in the competition. So, yeah, massively proud of what I've achieved.
Mm-hmm. And you were cooking for Rick Stein on Sunday night's show. What an honour. What an honour.
Yeah, a massive honour. He's obviously such a huge legend all over the world in terms of food and travel, and yeah, to get the opportunity to cook from him and learn from him in the MasterChef kitchen was something really special.
Mm. So talk me through the timeline. Auditions were in October, is that right?
Correct, yeah. So we had like the first phone video interview stuff in August, September, and then did a couple of days auditions the start of October and the final cook for the judges that last week of October, and then straight into filming in November.
Wow, okay. And you've got quite the accent there. It is definitely Loch Gray with a twinge of Melbourne. So where, as I said, how did you end up in Australia?
Well, I kind of, when I left school, I knew I wanted to go and do a bit of travelling, go and see Australia. And I thought I'd go and live in Sydney for a couple of years and do the whole backpacking thing. And that was 13 years ago and I'm still here. So
wow.
it's definitely home now.
And where did the interest in food start then?
I think I always had a passion for cooking from a young age. I was quite a fussy eater as a kid, and the mother used to always have to cook a separate dinner for me to the rest of the family. And she kind of got a bit sick of that when I was around 14 or 15 and told me if I wanted to have my own dinner, I'd have to cook it for myself. So I said, well, fine, I will cook for myself.
And I love her. What's your mom's name?
Marcella.
Marcella. And is she still here in Ireland?
She is, yeah. She's still back in Loch Ray.
Ah, big shout out, Marcella. So that's where the interest grew from, because your mom basically said, if you want to eat, I'm not cooking two dinners. You've got to learn how to do this yourself.
Exactly, yeah. And I just kind of took it upon myself. And I always knew I wanted to learn more about kind of food and cooking and what was out there. And of course, coming to Melbourne, it's just such a huge food culture here. And there's so much exposure to us. And it just became such a massive part of my life. And especially through COVID, I was working in the fitness industry and the gym was shut for such long periods of time. I spent most of my time kind of just cooking and watching old episodes of MasterChef and thought, yeah, I think this is where I need to take the next step in life.
Okay. So that was what happened. You were literally watching the show, you auditioned. And was that the first time that you auditioned for the show or?
No, I'd auditioned the year previous and I got through to that final cook for the judges. So I didn't quite make the show that year, and yeah, I went away and did a bit of soul searching and travelling before coming around to auditioning again.
I loved the story that that you told Emily, our researcher here, about your wife's Netflix password. Give us that one.
Yeah, so we were actually travelling through Europe and we were in France staying in a hotel and I was trying to set up the Netflix on the TV, and we'd just been emailed a couple of days before about MasterChef, said, hey, you should come back and audition again. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. So I said, put on Netflix and I'm going to bed. And I asked her what the Netflix password was and she changed it to Phil MasterChef 23. So she had really believed in me and wanted me to do it. And once she did that, I kind of felt I owe it to her to at least put in the application and see what happens. And yeah, I filled it out. And a couple of days later, they said, any chance you could be back in Melbourne in 6 weeks for auditions. And I just, yeah, booked the flight and came back and the rest is history.
Amazing, amazing. And your wife, does she cook as well or?
Well, my wife and I have been together for almost 8 years now and she hasn't cooked for me once. So definitely, yeah.
You must
definitely
be
not,
good.
But that's probably helped. Yeah, well, she just makes me think I'm good and just lets me keep cooking.
So when you get into the MasterChef pressure cooker, for want of a better expression, like you're basically in it, you're living it, you're living with the other contestants. The pressure must be intense.
Yeah, it is pretty full on and there's no real escape from it in a way. Like we all, like you say, live together. We all travel to the set together or just in the green room all day reading in between obviously filming, and then you go home and you're practicing and cooking, and even on the weekends you wouldn't film but you just spend the whole time in your apartment just kind of cooking and learning and reading recipes and trying to prepare as best you can for challenges. So it is kind of full on immersive environment, but I quite loved it. And everyone there just had the same passion and energy for food and cooking and for the show itself. And who I am as a cook and a person from the start to where I am now is just night and day.
Mm. And what was your signature dish?
So my signature dish was a take on the old meat and three veg, which was kind of the food that I was hated growing up and didn't want to eat. So it kind of forced me into cooking my own food. But I've kind of come full circle now. And yeah, I love a good bit of steak with some carrot puree, passionate puree, red wine sauce.
Gorgeous. And of course, MasterChef, they're famous for their mystery boxes where they give you a giant mystery box with all the different food and veg, and you've got to come up it can be anything, and you've got to come up with your dish. So what was your favourite mystery box?
I think my favourite one was when every week kind of had a theme, and one week it was Big Week, and it was just a giant mystery box like the size of an apartment building, and we went inside it, and there was a huge orange tree in there and a huge sacks of peanuts and this giant barrel of wine, and there was giant Toblerones in there, and I took the oranges and the Toblerones and I made a little kind of Terry's chocolate orange parfait ice cream dessert, and I got top dish of the day that day. And myself and Jock had quite a nice moment talking about the Terry's chocolate oranges we'd had from back home that the two other judges didn't quite get because they're from Australia and he's Scottish, so we had quite a nice connection over that.
That's Jock Zanfrillo, who was the judge and sadly passed away just before the show aired.
Yeah.
As you said, like he was from Scotland. That must have been really difficult.
Yeah, it was very tough. That was the morning the show was originally meant to air that we got that news. So it was a very hard period, and obviously when the show started as well, watching it was quite tough, but still look back with such fond memories. He was such a great leader and mentor and taught me and the other contestants so much over the time we had together, and just lucky to have the memories with him, I guess.
Mm. Well, listen, Phil, I mean, you go as far as you do on a show like that, one of the biggest shows in Australia. So what's next? Like, what do you hope comes out of it?
Well, at the moment, I'm doing a bit of cooking at a couple of restaurants in Melbourne, which I'm really, really enjoying. And I also have a huge passion for wine. It's kind of what I kind of started following the path down last year before the show. So I'm doing a bit of wine buying for an online wine brand. And yeah, I got a couple of collaborations and pop-ups in the works at the moment. And the goal is to get to have my own wine bar and restaurant here in Melbourne one day.
Mm. And with that sort of exposure, I mean, that's happened for so many of the contestants who've gone through the show, right?
Oh, yeah, massively. There's such a reach from the MasterChef community and the network here. Like, I'm working in a restaurant in the city that's a three Michelin star restaurant over here with having no training or experience, just from the connections and the network I've made on MasterChef. So there's so many possibilities from being on the show. It opens a lot of doors.
Mm-hmm. And I know that on the show, you've got to do that scene where you hand back the black aprons when you're voted out. But I'm dying to know, after the cameras stop rolling, do you get to keep them? Because that is the memento you want.
Yeah, well, we weren't sure about that, but everyone goes back for the filming of the finale episodes to kind of cheer on the last couple of contestants that are in it. And then once the filming wraps, there's a little bit of a celebratory drink and the production team come out and they give us a little gift pack with our aprons in it to take home. So I've got mine hanging up by the place in the kitchen.
Oh, and please tell me you've had friends over just so you can gloat, put it on and wear it around the gaff.
Yeah, we've been told, just keep it as a souvenir and not be taking it out and about. But there's been a few dinner parties where it has come out all right, all hours of the morning.
Well, listen, Phil, congratulations. And as I say, hope it opens many doors for you. And let's hope it opens the right one. That's Phil Conway that I was chatting to today, who did himself so proud on MasterChef Australia. Nice chatting to you, Phil, and thanks for staying up. Get into bed now, get a good night's sleep. Anish Toshe and I'm the Prevskelt and Anuktila Marion Nihulawan. Uramakat Marion. We were talking about this car trick, the car keys trick, a little earlier on, where if you have your clicker that unlocks and locks your car, if you hold the button down long enough, it actually opens and closes the electric windows. This has caused havoc all over the country. Patrick has said, Catherine, I only discovered the car key trick recently too. I pressed the key lock a couple of times to make sure. I returned to the car to see all four windows down and my phone still on the car seat. Eek, be careful out there. That comes in from Patrick. And... where's that other one gone? Oh, I've actually managed to delete it. Anyway, not to worry. Solo gigs. I went to countless gigs on my own and have great memories of those nights. Ignore people's judgment and it will free you up completely. Plus, on those nights, no one made fun of me putting in my earplugs, which in a group would have most likely happened, says Julian. I've gone to many gigs on my own for years. I have a husband, loads of friends, but they don't necessarily share my taste in music. I regularly go to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre alone and much prefer it. My advice is go and enjoy the concert. Tell that person to go to the gig. I'm into heavy metal. None of my friends are. I've been going to gigs alone for the last 10 years and some great shows. No regrets. I'm going alone to Grasspop Metal Festival in Belgium on Friday. If they really want, there are often groups on Facebook of people who are going alone too. And that comes in from Fergal. And I'll try and get through a few more of them as we go. But now it is time for this. Yes, it is time for our whodunit quiz, and we have two people who are ready to do battle, answering three whodunit questions each on, well, it could be anything: music, sport, TV, books, politics, films. Like all good whodunits, there will be clues. So if our players answer without a clue, they get 2 points. However, if they opt to go for a clue, which is slightly easier, and they get it right, they will get 1 point. So what are they playing for today? Well, this week we've teamed up with Mayo North Tourism to give away some lovely breaks located on a stunning rugged part of the Wild Atlantic Way, beautiful natural coastline, miles of pristine beaches to explore. North Mayo is a year-round destination. And today, one of our players will win a two-night stay with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening at the stunning Mount Falcon Estate, one of Ireland's most beautiful country estates. In summer, Mount Falcon Estate comes alive with the sound of music, with their live music dinner shows every Friday and Saturday night. And they've got sound baths and forest bathing and the salmon fishery and falconry, and true West of Ireland hospitality. So you can check out everything going on in North Mayo, which is mayonorth.ie. And the question we asked today was, which band play in Dublin next week? Is it the Pet Shop Boys or the Pet Shop Girls? It is the Pet Shop Boys, of course. And two people that did get it right today are Jerry White and Paul McLaren. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Hi, Catherine. Hi, June, Catherine. Lovely to hear you. You're dulcet toned rather than Ray.
Oh. Who is that I'm speaking to? Is that Jerry?
That's Jerry.
Jerry. Jerry, well, listen, it's good to be sitting in for a while, but the man will be back, as they say. Come here, what are you up to today?
Well, I'm out and about, Catherine, doing a little bit of consultancy work for a friend of mine, and enjoying the sun. It's absolutely beautiful.
Good for you. And any plans for the rest of the week if this weather holds up, which it looks like it's going to? It's a good one.
Well, I've just told Emily they're in the process of buying a new car. A bit scary now about the old hands-free thing with the windows now.
So had you heard of that before?
No. So never heard of that before. Never heard of it.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. But it's like everything else nowadays. You know, there's so much technology now.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm changing the car next week, early Father's Day present. But for the weekend now, as usual, Jenny and myself, we look after our grandchildren. We all meet out. It's like Christmas Day every Sunday.
Christmas Day every Sunday. How many grandchildren do you have?
We have 9 grandchildren, Karen, 46 years married, but they're all beautiful and healthy and just a laugh a minute, and they just use me as a punch bag, which I love.
Wow, 9 grandchildren, that's busy. And yourself and your wife Jenny look after them, mind
yeah.
them,
yeah.
host everybody every Sunday. How long have you been married to Jenny?
46 years, Catherine.
40.
We met Suttonians out in Sutton.
Oh, tell me about the night you met her.
Well, believe it or not, right, and this is the truth, right, my friend and I were out in Hoat, and on the way back we got in the bus, and there was 2 girls sitting in the classic television seat downstairs. One was tall and one was small. And as we're walking up, we said, listen, the 2 girls behind us, when we get into the Suttonians, we'll ask them up, and my friend was taller than me, and he asked Jenny up to dance, and I asked the smaller one up, Margaret, right. Now, after a week, she dumped me, unfortunately. And we were going to the pictures and she never turned up. But about 6 weeks later, I met Jenny out in Suttonians and she hadn't got her friend with her. And I just said, you know, said, my God, there's Jenny again. And I asked her up and just said, how come, where's Margaret, your friend? She said, well, the fact that she's sewed up, I'd never do that to anybody. I just gave it up. And I said, here we are now, 46 years later. Happy
46
married,
years later.
Children, 3 boys and a girl.
Fabulous. Well, I'd say you could do with a weekend in Mayo, could you?
I love Mayo, Catherine. We've been up and down there for years with the kids when they were small and that. And the sound of the falconry and the salmon fishing sounds absolutely, but I just love North Mayo. It's so beautiful.
It is. It's a very special part of the world. All right, hang on the line, Jerry. Nice chatting to you. Paul, how are you this afternoon?
You too, Catherine.
I'm good, Catherine. And yourself?
Good. Not a bother. Where are you calling from today?
I'm from Loughrea in County Galway. Same place as your last guest, Phil Conway.
The town
was very proud of him.
Oh, amazing.
On the MasterChef. Yeah.
And this is a very Irish question, but do you know Marcella, his mother who lives in Loughrea?
I do know Marcella.
You do
know?
Marcella
was, I do, yeah. Marcella was very much into music. Yeah, I do.
Okay, very proud of her son.
Why wouldn't she?
Exactly, and as Phil said to me off air, he said, "Jesus, even if I burnt toast, she'd be proud of me," which I thought was lovely. So, come here, have you any exciting plans for the summer?
For the summer, I do actually. I intend going on safari to Kenya in August.
Wow.
So my partner, Lillian, is from Kenya. So, we're going over there towards the end of August.
Amazing.
I'm really looking forward to it.
And when was the last time you were there?
Never.
Okay, so your partner's from there, so that'll be a very special trip.
It sure will.
Fabulous. And one of your daughters, Kira, she is big into camogie, it says here.
She is, yeah. She's with the Galway Intermediate team, who started their championship last Saturday, and she's currently sitting by a pool in Magaluf with her two sisters listening to me. And so, hi girls.
It's all about working hard and playing hard. Is that right, Paul?
I tell you, yeah, that's it. That's pretty much it. I don't know who's doing the working hard and I don't know who's doing the playing hard, but
Well, listen, it's lovely to chat to the two of you today. It's Jerry and Paul. Lads, wish each other the best of luck.
Best of luck, Jerry.
Best of luck, Paul.
All right, Jerry, my friend, you are contestant number one. So we are going to start with you. And our first category is music. All right. Are you into your music?
70s, 80s, 90s, Catherine, I'd say.
Okay. Well, you can get 1 point with a clue or 2 points for no clue.
I'll go 2 points, no clue.
2 points, no clue. All right. All you got to do is tell me who this is. All right, Jerry, who's that?
Oh, haven't a clue, Catherine. Have me there, I'm afraid.
Oh, no, hard luck. Well, I would say all nine of the grandchildren would have known that one. Miley Cyrus is who we were looking for there. Not to worry. The song again was Party in the USA. So, Paul, that means we are coming to you. And again, your category is music. What are you thinking? 1 point with a clue or 2 points for no clue?
I think I'll go with 1 point with a clue.
1 point with a clue. All right, so your clue is she would make a good neighbour. So who is this? Don't know how, don't know where, but we're becoming more than friends. Getting closer to the edge, stop me from falling. Okay, should have seen the warning sign, now I'm running out of time. Kind of want to cross the line, stop me from falling. Go for it, Paul.
Kylie Minogue
is the right answer. Well done, you. That has stopped me from falling. That means 1 point on the board for you. All right, Jerry, we are back to you. And our second category is Oscar-winning actors. Okay?
No problem.
No problem.
I knew the Kylie one.
It's always the way it works.
Listen, I'll go 1 point.
1 point, okay. So you want a clue?
Yeah.
Okay, so your clue is a birdie surname. Tell me who this is.
You know when you grow up in the suburbs of Sydney or Auckland or Newcastle, like Ridley or Jamie Bell, or the suburbs of anywhere, you know, a dream like this seems kind of vaguely ludicrous and completely unattainable. But this moment is directly connected to those childhood imaginings. And for anybody who's on the downside of advantage, it's possible.
A birdie surname. Who's that, Jerry?
Oh, Nightingale or something, no?
Russell Crowe, is it?
Russell Crowe is the right answer.
For God's sake,
Jerry. Listen, hang in there. Don't worry.
No problem.
Okay, Paul, back to you. Okay, so this is an Oscar-winning actor we want from you as well. All right, 1 point with a clue, 2 points for no clue. What do you think?
The civil servant in me is telling me play safe and go for the 1 point.
Okay, 1 point. Okay, if you get this right, we'll go to Jerry, which could end up in a tiebreaker, okay? But this is for 1 point. And your clue is he was a star of Pride and Prejudice. Who is this?
I have a feeling my career's just peaked. I'm afraid I have to warn you that I'm experiencing stirrings. Somewhere in the upper abdominals, which are threatening to form themselves into dance moves, which, joyous as they may be for me, it would be extremely problematic if they make it to my legs before I get off stage.
Who's that, Paul?
I can see him. He was in Love Actually, but I cannot think of his name.
Oh, that's Colin Firth is who we were looking
Colin
for there.
Firth.
Yes, that was his acceptance speech when, of course, he won Best Actor for The King's Speech in 2010.
Yes.
So that means we're back to you, Jerry. You're still very much in the game, let me tell you. So our third category is Irish voices. So it's the third and final category, Irish voices. What do you think? 1 point with a clue, 2 points for no clue.
Irish voices. I'll have to try the two, Catherine.
I think you do, just to play it safe.
Yeah.
All right, so this is 2 points. All you got to do is listen and tell me who is this.
It was astonishing. And listen, a shout out. The ensemble nature of the show. The actors come in, they go out, they do their bit, and they look heroic. The actual heroes of this were the crew, were the prop people, the makeup, costume, who are on every night in freezing cold weather. And they are the real heroes of the Battle of Winter.
Who's that, Jerry?
Is it part of the band?
Oh, no. Good guess, though. Unfortunately, it was Liam Cunningham. That is who we were looking for. The great Liam Cunningham talking about his work on Game of Thrones. Which means...
All right.
You didn't win today, Jerry, unfortunately.
No problem at all, Catherine.
Hard luck, Paul. You
thank
win
you very
with
much, Jerry.
1 point on
You're
the
very
board.
Welcome. Enjoy. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Great stuff. And Jerry, we'll be sending you down a Keep Cup. Keep your coffee warm over the next couple of weeks. But Paul, you are heading off to Mount Falcon in North Mayo. So are you looking forward to that?
Thank you. I am really looking forward to that. And I did. And the WhatsApp is going here. So just say hello to all my family and the girls over in Spain, to Lillian in Loughrea, and the people listening in Colbarn Shoes. And say hello to everybody, and well done again to Phil. And thank
Brilliant.
You.
Well done, you. Enjoy. Have a lovely afternoon.
You too.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Well, I read out a text at the top of the show from a listener who had tickets to go to Ben Howard, but nobody to go with. And we were offering lots of advice. And they've just got back in touch with me to say, hey, Catherine, it's the guy who didn't want to go on my own to Ben Howard. I found someone to go with. And yeah, I didn't want to be Billy No Mates, but I'm going and it's going to be epic. Thanks for all the support. Love that, have to say. All right. We were chatting about the Pet Shop Boys earlier on in our competition. I think it'd be rude not to, wouldn't it? Okay, very good. We're having a chat, chin wag. If a movie was popular once, it will be popular again. And that's probably why we're seeing a lot more remakes and sequels in cinemas these days. And yesterday we were chatting about Jurassic Park celebrating 30 years and how the franchise has grown stratospherically since Sam Neill and Laura Dern.
None of them have been as good as the first one.
None of them have
Not
been as good.
A single one. They shouldn't have, to be honest, it should have just stopped at one film.
You reckon?
Definitely.
But this is Brian Lloyd, who was chatting. We were chatting all the way through the Pet Shop Boys about movies. And he is the movie editor with entertainment.ie. And he has come in. We were just saying, you've come in with absolutely no notes. Not one.
It's all just in the head.
It'll
just come. Yeah, well, my head is massive. My hair is massive. So it'll all just come spurting out now.
Well, we were chatting about remaking movies to appeal to a new audience. Like, it's not a new concept in Hollywood. And I was saying about things that we learn as an adult. And today I learned that the Hollywood sign, mm-hmm. just before we go into movies, the Hollywood sign used to say Hollywood Land.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
Of course you did.
Well, like, in fairness. But like, no, there was, yeah, there was a film called Hollywood Land actually as well that was very good. But yeah, no, so in the 70s, it was actually, there was a big renovation project to, because the sign had been left decrepit for yes. years and years and years. And it was only kind of set up as a temporary kind of thing anyway. And there was a lot of famous actors that got involved in a campaign to save it, and now it's become like a landmark. I think it was something to do with the fact that the land that it was on was kind of like common land and nobody actually owned it. And
okay.
I think like the studio that set it up was probably like RKO or something like that. One of those studios that are now defunct had just left it there and it had just been come steadily decrepit, but now it's, you can
now
see it and it's,
look at what it brings.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking remakes and sequels. Why are they so popular?
It's not so much that they're popular, it's just the fact that studios keep making them because,
but I just think you can't go to the cinema now without seeing yeah. anything that is a sequel
or a remake. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, like a lot of it is due to the fact, well, I mean, look, if you only go to the cinema 2-3 times a year, yes, you're probably going to run into a remake or a sequel. But like, I mean, you know, every week there's something new in cinemas. Like this week, for example, like there's The Flash, but there's also Sunlight, which is this great Irish drama. It's really, really good. Last week you had films like Medusa Deluxe. I mean, the thing of it is if you want to see something original and something unique, yeah, you are going to have to travel for it. That means, mm-hmm. you know, if you're down in Cork, you're going to have to go to the Triskel. If you're in Galway, you're going to have to go to Pallas. If you're in Dublin, you've got the IFI and you've got Lighthouse. So it's a case of just, you're going to have to travel to see something original. Why are they so popular, or why are they making them so much? It's because they make money. Right now, there has never been more films, TV shows, podcasts, plays, gigs, concerts, you name it. There's more, never been more entertainment than there has ever been.
So much at the end of our fingertips.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And on top of that as well, studios basically are competing with all that and then have to kind of find a way to pierce through all that. And by doing that is getting something that people will recognise.
Mm.
So take something like The Little Mermaid that was out a couple of weeks ago. Everyone remembers the original one, the animated one. And on top of that as well, you have a generation of people who saw that, people like my age and your age, who probably now have kids, and they're saying, well, I remember that when I loved it. I'll bring my kids to go see that. So there you have
that sense of familiarity.
It's a sense of familiarity, exactly, that they'll constantly bring it up. I mean, in other cases, you do have things like where, you know, technology has kind of caught up with it and now they can make a live action version of The Little Mermaid. Or in the case of some other film that, you know, the special effects were a bit ropey 20, 30, 40 years ago and now they can do it and do it justice. Kind of like, you know, Batman, for example.
Yes. Yeah.
Because this week you have The Flash. And Michael Keaton is coming back, and Michael Keaton is, you know, over 70 now, but thanks to, you know, CGI and stunt people and all the rest of it, now he's still able to put on the Batman cowl and you can still
like
look at
30 years later.
Well, yeah, 30 years. Yeah, Batman Returns was 1992 and of course, or no, yeah, 1992. So yeah, it's over 30 years now. It's 31 years.
And then the other one I was reading about, Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
He's back for Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Dial of Destiny, yeah. And in that, in fact, they actually use CGI to de-age him. So like when there's scenes in it that are set in like, you know,
but
the 94.
What is he? Was he 80?
He is 78, I want to say.
Looking him up.
We're
Googling.
Looking him up. I'm nearly sure it's 78. But yeah, like, I mean, 78, but like they're able to use CGI to kind of make him look younger now. I'm, from what I've heard, 80 actually. Wow, okay. So he's 80. But yeah, they can use CGI to make him look younger. It was 78 when they were filming it. Okay, there we go. So I want to get that because I had 78 in my head. Yeah, but
heard about the movie? Is he actually going back and donning the fedora?
Oh yeah,
he's 100%. Doing the whole thing.
Yeah, he's doing the thing. Now, to be fair, I mean, the thing about Harrison Ford was that he was famous for doing all his own stunts. Obviously, at 78 or 80, he is more reliant on stunt people. And like again, that thing of it is now is that CGI has reached such a point that you can replace the face of an actor or a stunt person very, very easily with an actor now, so that you wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
My God.
So that's how you're able to see the likes of Harrison Ford and Michael
And here
Keaton.
We are feeling guilty about putting on the Paris filter. Do you know
yeah,
what I'm
but
saying?
You know what I mean? Yeah, but that's it now. Like, I mean, it's reached such a point now that you can have actors like Michael Keaton and Harrison Ford who, you know, 10, 20 years ago wouldn't have dreamed of doing, or wouldn't have dreamed of doing Indiana Jones or Batman again. But now we have enough CGI that they can.
And is Spielberg at the helm of that as well?
No, it's a guy called James Mangold. He directed Ford v Ferrari from a couple of years back. Remember that with Christian Bale and Matt Damon? Great film, yeah.
Girl Interrupted.
Girl Interrupted, very good. And he did loads of other stuff. He did Identity. He did Copland, was a great film that he did. So, yeah.
Okay.
Good director.
Let's talk about Barbie. We're reading about it all over the place. That's coming out as well. So this is obviously not a remake. This is a...
No, this is something original. And to be fair, like, I think what's interesting about Barbie is that as much as it is something familiar, i.e., you know, Barbie dolls that everyone played with. My wife played with it. I'm sure you played with it. Mm-hmm. People listening to this played with it. But now they're actually... I mean, the director that they have for this is Greta Gerwig. She did Little Women with Saoirse Ronan, and then she also did Lady Bird, Frances Ha. Like, a very kind of, you know, has a lot of artistic integrity, I would say. Do you know what I mean? Like, very, like, indie darling and all the rest of it. And her husband, or her partner, I should say, Noah Baumbach, again, done a lot of, like, very kind of cool indie, a lot of credo kind of films. The two of them are writing and directing this. But when you look at the trailers and you look at the teasers and you look at all the people that have lined up to star in it, there's actually something really kind of interesting about it, because it does feel like they're trying to take kind of, like, I suppose, like, pop culture and turn it into some kind of art, which I think is the way to go. I think there's nothing wrong with taking something familiar, but then kind of, if you can lend a certain intellectual weight to it, if you can lend a certain amount of art to it, it'll elevate it, you know?
So yeah, we've got Margot Robbie in that, Ryan Gosling, Will Ferrell, Emma McKay. When is that one coming out?
That is out July 21st, and that's on the same day as Oppenheimer, which is the film with Christopher Nolan.
I'm so looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm so looking forward to seeing that. The other one, of course, is Wonka. That's coming out as well.
Yeah.
What do we know about it? Very quickly.
Very quickly, Timothy Chalamet is going to play Willy Wonka. He's taken over from Gene Wilder and maybe kind of Johnny Depp from the remake. Haven't seen any trailers for this, haven't seen any teasers. All I've seen are a couple of images of Timothy Chalamet. He looks the part. I mean, he's got the hat.
Totally.
He's kind of halfway there, so.
Good casting. All right, Brian, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming in. That is all we've got time for today. Stay tuned for Sarah and Cormac. They are next on Drive Time, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.